Especially when they are not believers, they think that having faith is believing very improbable things. Believing that God created the world while we know that the world has come into existence by evolution, for example. So they think faith is believing improbable or even impossible things. There is this smart story of Alice in Wonderland. Does anybody of you know the book Alice in Wonderland? It's a very famous book. This girl, she enters in a very magical country, and there she meets funny people, and one of the people she meets is the queen of chess. So the game of chess, and the queen is looking like a queen of the chess game. And then the queen tells her that she has to believe something, and Alice said, "I cannot do that because that's impossible. I cannot believe in impossible things." And then the queen says, "I dare say you have a little practice," she says. "When I was young, at your age, I practiced a lot. I did it half an hour a day to practice having faith in impossible things. And sometimes I believed as many as 6 impossible things even before breakfast." So this is part of the book and the illustrations, they are very well known as well. So sometimes I believe 6 impossible things already before breakfast. I mean, is that faith? No, this is ridiculous. This is not what we mean by faith, of course. So what is faith? Well, in Hebrews chapter 11, we find a whole series of heroes of the faith. And they are presented as a kind of example that we can imitate them. Now you have to know, this is the first verse of Hebrews 11. Faith is the substance of things hoped for, the evidence of things not seen. So, and I will elaborate on that verse a little bit more later on. But first we have to see that this is part of a very serious letter. Hebrews is probably not written by Paul, as most of the other letters in the New Testament are. We don't know exactly who is the author. But the subject is very serious. It is about people who have known God, they have trusted their lives to Him, and now they are backsliding, and they're in danger of losing their faith. So Hebrews gives them a whole summary of what is faith really about. And it has 2 parts, you can say. The first part of the letter till chapter 10 verse 18 is talking about who Jesus is and what he has done for us. The songs that we have been just singing were also talking about that, that Jesus gave his life for us, that he washed us by his blood and so on. And the first part of the letter talks about that. And then the second part from 10 verse 19 on and then till the end talks about the practical implications. About what difference does that make if we believe about Jesus like that? Faith needs to be very practical. Now, I will read a few verses from Hebrews 10 first. And then we come also later on to Hebrews 11. We won't read all of it because they're long chapters, but we read some parts of it. And as I said, in the first part, it talks about Jesus who gave himself as a living sacrifice to God. He was the high priest who didn't offer a lamb or a goat to God, but he offered himself. He is the high priest, he is the temple even. And the first part of the letter says, because we have this complete sacrifice once and for all, we don't need any more sacrifice, we don't need any more the temple or the priesthood or anything, because Christ is our high priest. And then the second part starts with some admonishments, encouragements. So, since we have a great high priest, that is Christ, over the house of God, which is the church, it says, let us draw near with a true heart in full assurance of faith, with our hearts sprinkled clean from an evil conscience and our bodies washed with pure water. Let us hold fast the confession of our hope without wavering, for he who promised is faithful. And let us consider how to steer one another to love and good works. three times it says, let us do this, let us do that. So, and you can already see in the way I printed it here, that it talks about faith and hope and love. So, faith, you can never separate faith from hope and from love. They're the three big Christian virtues, and they belong together. You can distinguish them, and yet they always point into the same direction. Now, this faith, hope, and love comes back in the rest of the chapter, because chapter 11, I already said, is the chapter about faith, the heroes of faith. And then chapter 11 talks about hope. It talks about that we have to run the race with endurance, to fix our eyes on Jesus and not fall back, and so on. And then chapter 13 starts with this phrase, let brotherly love continue, and talks about hospitality and many other things. So how does love look? What does it look like? So this is a bit to have a kind of overview. What are we talking about here? What is this letter? Now in chapter 10, just before chapter 11 starts, it says, it is a quotation from the prophet Habakkuk from the Old Testament, and it gives two ways of dealing with faith who are contrary, you could say. The quotation is this: my righteous, God says, my righteous one shall live by faith, and if he shrinks back, my soul has no pleasure in him. So you have on the one hand the person who lives by faith, and you have on the other hand the person who shrinks back, who is not committed, who maybe goes through the movements, he goes to church, he prays or does whatever, but he doesn't live by faith. And God says, I don't have pleasure in that. So the righteous shall live by faith, and the one who shrinks back is the one who in which God has no pleasure. This is the opposition that is made here. And of course, already now, for you, for me, the question is, which one of the two types am I? This one, the righteous one? Or am I the one who lets it flow a little bit, lets it in the middle? I'm not really committed, so to say. Now, this is all to introduce chapter 11 about the great heroes of faith. If you read the whole chapter, which we won't do, but I encourage you to do that at home, you will see that there are at least 20 names, people who are mentioned from the Old Testament who are presented to us as examples of faith. So we will just read from verse to 6, but there are 40 verses in the chapter, and you will see there are many other things mentioned, but we will just stick to these first 6 verses. It says this: now faith is the assurance of things hoped for, the conviction of things not seen. For by it the people of old received their commendation. By faith we understand that the universe was created by the word of God, so that what is seen was not made out of things that are visible. By faith Abel offered to God a more acceptable sacrifice than Cain, through which he was commended as righteous, God commending him by accepting his gifts. And through his faith, though he died, he still speaks. By faith, Enoch was taken up so that he should not see death, and he was not found because God had taken him. Now before he was taken, he was commended as having pleased God. And without faith, it is impossible to please him, for whoever would draw near to God must believe that he exists and that he rewards those who seek him. And then it continues, by faith, Noah, who built the ark, did certain things, and so on. Now here, Abel and Enoch are mentioned. They all they come from the first book of the Bible, from Genesis. And if you know the stories, you can perhaps have some images there, why they are mentioned. We don't have time to enter into those stories. They are just given as examples. Why has the Bible so many stories? Because stories speak more to our hearts. The Bible is not just abstract theory, abstract truths, but it's incarnated, it is becoming flesh and blood in live people who are like us. And therefore, stories can help us to understand, to grasp it better. But now let us consider, first of all, this first sentence about faith. You could say it is, well, not really a definition, but it is at least a description of what faith is. Faith is the assurance of things hoped for, conviction of things not seen. In the older translation, it says even the evidence of things not seen. So what is meant by that? You know, you could say faith has two elements, knowledge and trust. In the Netherlands, we have an old book already from the 16th century, the Heidelberg Catechism, and some of the Dutch people undoubtedly have heard about it and perhaps even learned from it. But it gives this definition of faith, that faith is not just certain knowledge, but also assurance, trust. And both are needed. You know, it is not just a jump in the dark, faith, not just giving my trust to anything, anybody, without any reason. No, it is trust which is grounded on facts. Let me give you an example of that. If somebody would tell me about my wife, for example, they would tell me, we have evidence that your wife, you think you are married nearly 40 years with her out of love, but actually what she really wants, she's after your money. That would not be very wise, because when we married, I had a debt of studiefinanciering. How do you study debt of 30,000 guilders? But anyway, people would give that. They say, we have proof that she is really doing that. I am 100% sure, whatever they tell me, that it is not true. I know. Maybe I cannot prove it, but I know in my heart. You know, the things that you know mathematically with certainty are not the things that really interest us so much. The things that really interest us are the things that we know with our heart, with a different faculty. And, you know, many things we cannot prove. You cannot prove, for example, that freedom exists. And there are scientists today who deny it, who flatly deny that freedom exists. You cannot prove, let me give you another other example, you cannot prove that this world has not been created 2 minutes ago, including all your memories and all your thoughts and your ideas that the world has existed a long time. It could be that God created just 2 minutes ago and gave you the idea that you have lived a long life already. Which you cannot prove even that we are living, that we are not living in the Matrix. We could. But we know that it is an interesting thought, perhaps, but we know it's not true. Nobody can live like that. So you can declare anything you want, but if it's not grounded in facts, the question is always, can you live with it? If the scientist who denies freedom, can he live with that? He writes a book about it. We are our brains. Or freedom does not exist. He writes a book about it and he offers it on the market. He wants me to read it and he wants me to change my mind about it. He presupposes that I'm free to change my mind and to take in what he is telling me. So this is self-contradictory. You see, faith needs to be grounded in facts. And that's exactly what the biblical faith is. It is grounded in facts. One of the most famous atheists of these days is Richard Dawkins. Perhaps you have heard of him. And he says this, faith is the great cop-out. He has no respect at all for people who believe. He says it's a great excuse to evade the need to think and evaluate evidence. Faith is belief in spite of and even perhaps because of the lack of evidence, he says. When you ask Mr. Dawkins, can you give me examples of people, of theologians, for example, who agree with this definition or this description? He cannot give the evidence because they are not. There is no theologian would agree with that. And no believer, I would think, either. You don't believe because you lack evidence. You believe because you have evidence that faith is reliable, that faith in God is not built on sand, but that it is really something worthwhile. Let me quote from another letter, from the second letter of Peter, chapter 1, verse 16. Peter says, "We did not follow cleverly devised myths, just stories, when we made known to you the power and coming of our Lord Jesus Christ, but we were eyewitnesses of his majesty." And the whole Bible is full of that. That faith is built on testimony, on witnesses who were there and who are reliable. It's not hanging in mid-air somewhere. It is, you may investigate. And if you doubt, please go ahead and really see if this faith is talking about something worthwhile. And if you can trust your life to it, yes or no. I believe that you will find hard facts. That is the basis of faith. Now, of course, faith doesn't stay with the hard facts, because if I have just hard facts, then what does it do to me? Now, faith also gives me the possibility that I can entrust me to the person that it talks about. So this definition that we saw before, this description from Hebrews chapter 11, it says, faith is the assurance of things hoped for, and it's the conviction of things not seen. So it gives assurance about things that are not yet there, hope for the future. And it gives also a conviction about things that are not seen, things that are not visible with my physical eyes, and yet are very, very real. Faith invites us to see with the eyes of our heart. This is a song that we sometimes sing, "Open the eyes of my heart, Lord," and so on. So faith is looking further, uitzicht in Dutch, to what is not yet. So faith has its eyes on hope, and faith is looking deeper to what is at the basis of everything, inzicht, to God. That is what faith is. You know, faith makes that you see things that you otherwise would not see. Let me give an example. Falling in love. Is there anybody here in the room who has ever fallen in love? I think there are. There are many people. You know the experience. You know what happens when you fall in love? Your whole world changes at that moment. You get this feeling that you live in a different world, right? And you think, oh, the world is so much more beautiful than I ever thought because I'm in love. Now, the bad news is this feeling goes away. Really, it lasts maybe 2 weeks, it lasts maybe 2 months, but certainly it won't last 2 years, and it won't last your whole life. The good news is that falling in love can deepen towards love. So, first of all, you have this picture, this idealized picture of the other person. She's perfect, he is beautiful, and so on. And then later on you find that it is a real person who contradicts you and who was not always perfect, and so on. And you love a sinner, actually, and another person loves you, a sinner, and so on. So then you have to struggle. But when you struggle a bit, then you discover that there is something deeper that binds you together. That is love. And love opens your eyes for beauties that you didn't see at first. And you recognize something in the other person, and your world becomes more beautiful, as it were. Well, the same process happens in faith. There may be people who come to faith, and first they didn't believe, and then suddenly they're introduced to God, and they're introduced to Jesus, and they see the beauty of the gospel, and the world changes, and they live in a rose-colored world. They are so happy. And this is great, wonderful. But then your faith needs to deepen in true faith, in living out the faith. And that is something different. So you have to go back to the base every time. I am welcome with God. I am accepted with God. Let us draw near. That was what we just read in chapter 10. If we have such a high priest who gave himself, who gave everything for us, now we are free to come to God. Let us draw near. Let us be close to him. Let us be feeling welcome to him. And that is living with faith. And then you will discover that there is much more than you ever thought at the beginning. And that God wants to pour out his blessings over you. You could say that faith is a sense, one of our senses. You know, we have the sense of sight or hearing and so on. But faith is a different sense. A sense which is sleeping and which needs to be awakened. Let me compare that with the sense of sight, for example. Imagine that you were born in a cave, which is dark, completely dark, and that you have been there all your life. Could be. And then you have the sense of sight, but it has never been used because you don't know light. So, and then if somebody puts on the light suddenly, then this sense of sight needs to be awakened and needs to be adjusted. What is happening? This is something doing to me. And so, first you didn't know it, but then you know because the light is turned on. Now with faith, it's something like that. Faith is something, it is a sleeping faculty in you. It's never used perhaps. And then suddenly you come into the object of faith, like the eye comes into the nearness of light. You come into the nearness of what faith is about. God. God knocks at your door. God does something in you. And your faith is awakened. And you think, really? Is there somebody there? Is it really true that somebody wants to enter my life and wants to bless my life, wants to accept me, wants to give me everything that I could ever wish? Is that really true? So faith is receiving what is presented to you, like the eye receives the light, and you are presented by a living person. A person, so first you thought it's all myths, it's all stories about God. I mean, it doesn't exist. And then at one point you discover he might be there. I think he is there. He really is knocking at my door. I'm opening the door. He's in. That's faith. You can discover that. So, and now this chapter 11 of Hebrews talks about all these people who have made discoveries with God coming into their life and changing their life completely. You know, with faith, it is not the amount of faith you have in the beginning which counts. Jesus says, if you have faith like a mustard seed, that will be sufficient. Imagine a person who has the fear of flying. And another person, he has never had any fear of flying. He likes it. They both are waiting in line to board the plane. Now, they enter the plane, and the one is having fear all the time. And the other one, he is enjoying himself. Now, it doesn't really matter because when the plane arrives, both are at the destination. One with little faith and the other with much faith. But it doesn't make a difference how much faith you have. It's only who do you give your faith to? Did you really have sufficient reason to trust that the pilot knows his way and that the plane is not falling apart and so on? And if you say, well, I have sufficient reason because actually flying is one of the safest mode of transport that has ever been invented. So I entrust myself to this because I have sufficient reason. And then you find it really helps me in this case. It's the same with faith. I have sufficient reason to entrust me to the God who presents himself in the Bible, who has shown his face in Jesus Christ. And I say, okay, if God is like that, I think I can trust him. I think I can live with him. And then you discover that you arrive at your destination. You discover that it didn't depend on your subjective experience to start with, but it depends on God who is faithful and God who really wants to give himself to you. So, you know, this chapter 11 of Hebrews, I already said, it talks about many stories. It just hints at them, and you should read all the stories to really get a feel for that. And the writer Afria has mentioned about 20 persons. He says, I could go on and on and on, but I have no time. And it's the same for me. I have no time to talk about all these persons. Maybe another time. I will just end with an exhortation, one of the six verses that we read already in verse 6 of Hebrews. It says, whoever would draw near to God must believe that he exists and that he rewards those who seek him. And that is, in fact, the only thing that you have to do. You can leave it always in the middle. You can always leave it uncertain. Okay, I believe there must be something. It might be God, it might be something different, but I don't commit, I don't make a choice anywhere. Then it will do you no good. All these people who believe in something, the majority of the Dutch, they believe there must be ietsisme, there must be something, but we don't know really what. It doesn't do any good. But if you commit yourself, you say, I have sufficient evidence that the God of the Bible is not just an invention by people, but it is a reliable story. It is the story about Jesus is grounded in hard facts, in history, and so on. And now I entrust myself. I entrust myself to him, and then I will discover that he is really faithful and that he rewards that he will show himself in my life. And that makes a difference. So what is faith? Committing yourself to the God who has revealed himself in his Son, in Jesus Christ, and then discovering more and more how true he is and how real he is and what he wants to give you and how he wants to involve you in his big plan to renew this creation completely.